chapter 18, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verse 31. Om Parataya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitam Ritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusantadhami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishini. Verse 31. Yaya dharmam adharmam cha. Karyam cha karyam eva cha. Ayatavat prajanati. Ayatavat prajanati buddhissa paritarajasi buddhissa paritarajasi yaya dharmam adharmam cha karyam cha akaryam eva cha ayatavat prajanati buddhihi sa parita Rajasi. So we're working on the Sattva Rajas Tamas types of buddhi. Buddhi means that faculty of thinking. So the faculty of thinking, of commitment, you know, of clarity of mind. That's influenced by Sattva Rajas and Tamas. Okay. And so here, this buddhi is the rajasi buddhi, so the rajas. So he says, yaya, by which dharma and adharma, yaya, by which dharma adharmam cha, dharma and adharma, karyam, that which is to be done, cha, and akaryam, that which isn't to be done. Eva indeed cha. So, by which dharma and adharma, and that which is to be done, karyam, and that which should not be done, akaryam, prajanati, one knows very clearly. Janati means one knows, but prajanati means he knows very clearly. Yatavat, but he knows ayatavat. If I said he knows yatavat, he knows dharma and adharma clearly, as it is, yatavat, just as it is. He knows what is to be done and what is not to be done, yatavat, as it is. But here it's prajanati, he knows what is dharma and adharma, and what is to be done and what is not to be done, but ayatavat, but not really as it is. That is, then he says, sa parita, e parita, name for Arjuna. That buddhi is called rajasi. Rajasi, buddhi, the word buddhi is feminine noun. So rajasi, that e ending is a feminine affix. So that buddhi is called rajasic. And so Swamiji only has a couple of paragraphs on this, but it's very interesting because I'm sure we can also see this particular buddhi in ourselves also. Because these are the ones that, this type of buddhi is the one that requires some discipline. It goes like this. All of the values, when we do the value of values, like Swamiji's beautiful book on value of values, we all have values. We all have the values. We grow up with the values. Yeah. But we don't have enough value for the values. In other words, we don't know to what degree all these values are really to our best interests. They're in our best interest to make us really have a value for the value. We're brought up with these values. In fact, if I look at in Buddhism, I list, sometimes I do this in my Eastern Theories class. I take all the values in Buddhism and I list them. The spiritual values. In yoga, I list all the spiritual values. In Vedanta, I list all the spiritual values. And then in all of this, I take different religions, I list the spiritual values. They're all more or less the same. You know? So we know, I mean, these are thousands and thousands of years of experience have made these values, have given life to these values. The values themselves don't go away. And so if you have a sattvika buddhi, you have a value for the values as they are. And so to have a value for the values, or to really understand the values as they are, is to understand really that they are in your best interests. They're in the best interests of the other person, but they're also in your best interest. Even something like dharma itself is good for the other person, doing to others as you would have done to yourself. It is good for the other person because everybody has that same golden rule. Do unto others as you would have done to yourself. What's so powerful about that rule is that the part as you would have done to yourself. You know, nobody has to really teach you that. It's kind of innate. This dharma is innate when it comes to what you want and how you want to be treated. And so we are clear on that. But we're not clear on the other side of it, that I should treat other beings that way. I know that you need to treat me in that way. That is good for me. But the golden rule is, may you treat others as you would want to be treated. And in that part, we rationalize. Or we don't think. At that point, the golden rule somehow
breaks down.
Just goes into the background a little bit. Go into the background. You know? It never goes into the background in reference to me. That's always very, very clear. And so this is what they mean by ayatavat. As it really is, it's not that you don't know, but we can compromise or change them just a little bit, manipulate them a little bit so that that golden rule is in our best interest. The problem, the thing here is the difference between sattvika and rajas is not that we don't know. We do know. But we will manipulate or push it off to the side when we think that that's better for us. Sattvika, you know it's not better for you. You know, that can sound selfish, but it's not selfish. The world, you can say, well, following dharma is selfish. If you say following dharma is selfish if I just know that it's in my best interest. But how can you not know it's in your best interest when it is? That's not selfish. It actually is in your best interest. You know, it's kind of like saying, this is a place where people can get mixed up a little bit. If the nature of the Atma, of the self, is ananda, and in fact, the only ananda we ever experience is my own self, is my own being. There really is no ananda existing out there as an object. The experience of the ananda, or wholeness, or fullness, is never something which I am looking at. We don't look at the ananda. Say you're looking at the ananda, you're not. You're looking at somebody else's, signs. They have little signs of ananda, like a big smile or laughing, you know, or exuding great happiness by their behavior, right? Or speaking in a cheery voice. You know, that's what we say. Or they are exhibiting the gunas or the qualities of ananda, right? And then you might say, I wish I was happy like that, you know. But your experience of Ananda is not coming from the experience of somebody else's gunas. Gunas here means qualities, you know, like their smile or whatnot. Your experience of Ananda is always your own being. If it's not your own being, then you wish you were having that. And so, say we say that really Ananda is only your own being. That's all, that's what it is. There is no other experience of Ananda. The only secondary experience of Ananda that we have, and it is secondary, is that when, because of the practice of Dharma, or simple things like the fulfillment of a desire, when the mind becomes quiet, at that time the mind is like a mirror, and it's not contributing any other type of moods or emotions to thwart the experience of your own wholeness. Right? Just think of it like when you fulfill a desire, or you're taking a walk in nature, or you're living a life that is not clouded by a dharma, the mind enjoys shanti. Or listening to beautiful music, say whatever you want it to be, whatever, when the mind is enjoying that quietude or that peace, at that time that mind is not competing, is not creating emotions that are competing with my wholeness. You know, it's kind of like the sun example. If I hold a clean mirror up to the sun, or if I have a clear water bucket reflecting the sun. The sun is the sun. Nothing's happening to it at all. But the mind, which is now very clear, is by its nature in harmony because of the shanti in the mind. The sun is reflecting fully in it. And so it feels peace, even though that peace is temporal, right? It's temporal. The brightness of the sun is not temporal. It's not changing by the quality of the mind. But in samsara, we learn how to create situations that give me that temporal ananda, an experience, a time-bound experience of ananda, which is really just a reflection. And that experience of ananda will go whenever the mind tenses up. You see that? And so, for a samsari, there's two big levels here of samsara. One is, let me gain that experience of ananda through the fulfillment of pleasures, going after pleasures and going away from things that I don't like. Because when I can do that, if I can fulfill a desire, I will get a momentary peace of mind. Because the instant I fulfill a desire, my mind becomes desireless, so it's quiet. And in that quiet mind, there's no resistance. There's nothing, there's no competition in that mind with my own nature. So that mind feels very much at home because the desire has just been fulfilled, feels happy. Going for a walk in nature, all of these different things I can do, but those are very temporal, very, very temporal, when it's only about fulfilling desire. When it's dharma, what I start to learn as I mature, that when my life is dharma-bound, in other words, my behavior is bound by dharma, there's a longer-lasting shanti, because my commitment now is not to fulfilling desire, but it is doing what is appropriate to be done, what is meant to be done. And that's where that is my desire. My desire is not out here anymore. My desire is toward dharma. When the desire is toward dharma, I have much more control. Because dharma, adharma exists, I have control over what I do. And so if my commitment is to dharma, the mind enjoys a much more stable sense of shanti. And so there's a more stable sense of well-being. And so what happens for such a samsari, that's a samsari, but it's a vaidika samsari, right? Because I'm committed to Dharma, it doesn't mean that I have anything against pleasure. It's just that pleasure cannot go against Dharma. And when that's the case, I have a baseline of shanti that is much greater than if it's only pleasure, going after pleasure and away from pain, with no baseline of Dharma. Because then underlying the pleasure and pain is there's nothing stable. Because adharma, we learn over and over again that adharma itself causes grief. You know? If I treat you in a way that I don't want to be treated, myself to be treated, I will feel the pain of that, or the agitation of that. Because it's a two-way street. Both people benefit from the way you treat that person. So the benefit can be positive or negative, right? You both share in the way you treat that other person. And so here, for a person to have the sattvika, that sattvika buddhi, that value has been assimilated. Right? It's a big thing to assimilate that, actually. I understand why I do dharma and why I avoid adharma. I understand why it's important for me to do what is to be done in terms of my own wholeness. You know? And what isn't to be done in terms of my own well-being. I know that, and I know its relationship to bondage and moksha. That was the previous verse. Here, I know dharma and adharma. I've been brought up as a vaidika. I know these things. Dharma and what is to be. I know dharma, I understand it. I know adharma, what they mean by that. I know what is to be done, what is not to be done. But I don't really know it as it is. I don't have the full picture in terms of how I am affected by by doing dharma and adharma. My part in it. It's just a rule. But rules aren't enough. The rules, I have to understand them in reference to what is good for me, what blesses me, really, and why. Otherwise, these rules, you know, these values that I've been brought up with won't hold when something out here seems like it will make me happy. If this will make me happy and this dharma is getting in my way, then I'll make up some reason why in this case this is okay to do that.
And
that's there's a commitment. I understand dharma and adharma, but I don't really. That's the ayatavat, but not really. Not fully, not completely. So that's the rajasa buddhi. Now we have to do the tamasa. Tamasi buddhi. So he says, adharmam dharmam itiya, adharmam dharmam itiya, manyate tamasavrita, manyate tamasavrita, sarvartan viparitanscha, sarvartan viparitanscha, buddhissa partha tamasi, buddhissa partha tamasi, adharmam dharmam iti ya manyate tamasa avrita sarvartan viparitan cha buddhihi sa partha tamasi. He says that buddhi, buddhihi sa partha tamasi, that buddhihi partha is tamas, is born of tamas. It says that buddhi which ya, top line, ya which tamasa, avrata, which being covered by tamas, being covered by ignorance. So you've got that ya, the buddhihi, that sa, see, the sa, the sa ya, that's relative, correlative. So it says sa buddhihi, that buddhi is tamas, tamasi, is tamasic. Ya, which, tamasa avrata, being covered by tamas, okay, manyate, it considers that buddhi being covered by tamas, means ignorance. It considers dharma to be a dharma. Adharmam dharmam iti. That it considers dharma to be a dharma to be dharma. Sarvartan viparitanscha. And it considers, you know, all things to be the opposite, viparita, of what they are. Right? That's the tamasa buddhi. And so that type of buddhi is really extreme. That's the type of person, Swamiji's little commentary on this is really funny, but true. It's kind of like a mafia mind. The mind, that type of person that would say, if you don't lie, you won't get anywhere. Don't be a fool, you know. You have to fool people. You have to manipulate people to get them to do what you want, or they won't do what you want. You won't get anywhere in life, you know. Don't be too honest, you know. Don't be too honest. It won't work to your advantage. In fact, people will take advantage of you. You take advantage of them first. For everything goes, everything, their value is the opposite. Everything is the opposite of what dharma actually is. And they will even take what they think to be true. This is the truth. This is really dharma, not what you think. Don't think you can live a happy life if you don't cheat. You'll never get onto the top. You'll never get to the top. You have to cheat to get to the top. Don't believe about all this honesty stuff. I hope Swamiji goes on like this.
Yeah, he'd like that.
He likes it. He does it even in his little commentary, but when he's doing it for real, when he's teaching, you're thinking, oh my God, that's... But that's what it is. That's what they mean by that tamasa buddhi. It's where they take a dharma to be dharma and dharma to be foolish. That all of the values are actually then the opposite of what they should be. All of the positions that a dharmi would take, they'll take the opposite. And they'll fight for it also. And they'll sneer at you. We have a lot of that going on in the world today. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very self-righteous. You know. And they look at you as though you're weak. You know. Yeah. You're weak and foolish. And they're ready to crush you.
Yeah.
Right? You weak, foolish person. They crush you. That's tennis.
Now you
foolish person. Dharma rolls over, you know, a dharma can look like it's winning, but the truth, the whole order is dharma. The order, Bhagavan's order is dharma. And so in the end, a dharma will be crushed by dharma. But it creates such havoc in the meantime. So, that's the tamasa. Now, the next one it goes into is called dhriti. Dhriti is interesting. Dhriti is your resolve. Because if anything that you want to accomplish, say you want to accomplish something in life, you have to have some sort of resolve or staying power. It's called dhriti, your resolve, your ability to stick something, stay with something, to stick it through without quitting. That's dritti, that resolve. So he's going to give sattva, rajas, and tamas of dritti. So, dhrityayaya dharayate, dhrityayaya dharayate, manav pranendriya, manav pranendriya kriyaha, manav pranendriya kriyaha, yogena vyabhicharinya, yogena vyabhicharinya, dhritisa paratasatviki, dhritisa paratasatviki, dhritya yaya dharyate, manaha prana indriya kriyaha, yogena avyabhicharinya dhritihi sa parta sattviki. He says, dhritihi sa parta sattviki, that dhriti, that resolve, hey parta, is sattvik, is sattviki. Dhriti also is a feminine noun, that's why you're getting that wrong here. That dhriti, so dhritihi sa parta sattviki, that dhriti is sattvika. Dhrityayaya, by which dhriti, by which resolve, dharayate, one maintains, one sustains the mind, one's prana, vital force, one's sense organs, indriyas are the sense organs and organs of actions, and organs of action, kriyaha. So kriya means the activity. So the activities of the mind, the mental vrittis, right? Your prana, your vital force, your organs of action, and your sense organs. Yogena just means with a steady commitment, with a steady resolve, with a steady practice. Okay, and so here what they're talking about for sattvika, sattvika dhriti is that dharma here is understood. I am able to control my body, mind, sense organs. I have a commitment to handling them, to keeping them in line with dharma. That's what I do. And that's all. It's not about pleasure or pain. My life isn't run by that at all, actually. If the pleasure, pain, let me have this so that I can be, what I mean by pleasure and pain, sukha and dukkha, means raga dvesha. Raga and dvesha is not running my life. Dharma is running my life. And so that means that my resolve is toward keeping the upadhi in check. My body, mind, sense organs, my organs of action. Keep my resolve, my dhriti is toward keeping them in line with dharma. Because there's always the opportunity for adharma. There's always something that comes up where choice has to be made. In fact, the whole Ramayana and the Mahabharata is really a war between dharma and adharma. Because the thing is, what is natural to you as a human being is dharma, because dharma supports you. Dharma is what is natural because dharma is what you yourself want. But then you pick up things along the way. You know, what the Joneses are doing over here, what this person has over here, you know, as you're going along in life and you only have these things, which is true for each one of us. We only have these things, whatever is there in our prarabdha karma. And that is so limited compared to what exists in the universe. So this is it. It's nothing compared to the universe. You know? And then you see all of these other people who have all these other things. And you not only see them with all of these other things, you see them with happy with all these other things. You know? And you have what you want. You have what you have. You already have these things. And you're not necessarily happy. You're happy some of the times. Some of the times you're not happy. But when you see somebody with this thing over there and they're happy, then you'll think, I would like to have that. Or I'd like to have what that person has. You know? And it's only as one becomes a mumukshu. It's a huge, huge thing to become a mumukshu, because that when you become a mumukshu, what you realize is that nothing that I have can make me happy in any lasting way. Not because of me, or not because of, there's no blame, it's just because of the nature of things. Everything that exists in my sphere is time-bound. And so it could give me a moment of happiness, but that's all it can do, because the world is time-bound. And that's true not only for my things, it's for everybody's things. There's no exception. And so when I realize that, then my relationship to all of these things starts to change. But until I realize that, I'm picking up a lot of things along the way that, oh, if only I had that, I would be happy. Only if I had that, I could be happy. I'm lacking this, and I'm lacking this, and I'm lacking this. You know? So how can I be happy unless I get all of these things? So the mind then is being tempted all the time, you know, by these pleasures. And so the one who has this dritti, this resolve, is the one who, that's a lot of strength involved. Until you've sorted all of this stuff out, the strength is, I don't compromise Dharma. Even if I think that looks so good, that would be so great, I can enjoy that if it doesn't go against Dharma. So that's the dritti, that's what they're talking about here. It makes it clear, makes it much more clear in the Vasha. Because all it really says in the verse is, it says that dharma is sattvika, which is able to sustain the activities of the body, mind, sense organs with a resolve, yogena, that yoga is the dharma there, with an unflinching, avyabhicharena means unflinching, unwavering dharma, that yogena, you can understand that like with a yogena samadhina. Samadhina means, it's like a, samadhina means that there's no wavering in the mind. So that type of resolve is one that is controlling your body, mind, sense organs in reference to what? Well, in reference to dharma, adharma. So that's all that is meant there. That's the sattvika. That's the sattvika resolve. Okay, let's stop there, because I want to do a little bit more on that, and the next one will take me a while. So let's stop there. Om swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmane pyashubhamastu nityam lokasamastasukino bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parajanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Parahitaha Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Pavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityor Ma Amatangamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
I was curious about something that was said. If one follows Dharma, then there's that avoids grief, right? Did I catch that properly?
It avoids, I mean, I think grief is there in the world, but it avoids... the sorrow of vishada, you know, that comes from a dharma. And come
oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because, you know, Krishna's teaching Arjuna, and Arjuna gets the understanding of what his nature is like, and nothing can be killed, and I kill nothing. And yet, in this battle, all of these people are butchered. And practically both sides mm-hmm. of the both sides are just wiped out. And then there's the village that's left behind, the women and the children. And I was curious of how they felt blessed by Dharma in that situation.
I don't think that they... I don't think anybody's going to be happy being slaughtered, you know. But there's something to be said. There's some different... The only thing that's... Let's put it this way. Let's just go from the inside out. The only thing that is free from pain and suffering is the Atma. That's it. There is nothing within the creation that is not subject to death, you know. And it's not subject to loss.
Yeah.
Okay. But now, for your mind, how does your mind hold loss or suffering? You know, how does it hold it? And so that's where Dharma becomes so beautiful, because you hold loss and suffering in a way that you can say Shanti itself. I'm talking relatively now, just Dharma. Shanti holds loss and suffering. But it's not that loss and suffering isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It is there. As long, in the creation, it is there.
Mm-hmm.
But Shanti, a buddhi that is strong, that has dharma, is holding that. And then for a jnani, there's something behind that that's holding it, which is the self, which is not suffering at all, ever. You know. But a buddhi that has dharma also has a lot of strength and commitment that is holding that suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Now say the buddhi that is holding the suffering is itself a dharma, a dharmic. That means it has no stability. So there's nothing holding it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It also, the suffering is suffering, but then suffering is holding the suffering.
Yeah.
You know, that's that terrible vishada. That's kind of a suffering upon suffering upon suffering, and then you try to make that better through satisfying raga dvesha. That just makes the knot more and more, you know, tight. It's like a noose. And you're trying to continually relieve the noose by pleasure, you know.
Mm-hmm. It never works.
It does. I think that it does work a little bit. Like that's why people drink and do things, you know, and fulfill desires, because they get a little bit of relief. But it's not much. And it needs to be constantly fueled, because you can't really be alone with yourself. A person who has dharma can be alone with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mind is blessed. It has that prasada buddhi. It's really blessed by the shanti. That Ishwara Nugraha, that grace of God, that's really just dharma. It's punya. It means the mind enjoys the strength of dharma, which is holding the grief or the suffering that is there in the world. There's a lot of suffering in this world. You know. And in fact, I was listening to one of Swamiji's little talks somebody sent me. He was somehow saying, like, the more you know about what's going on in the world, the sadder you can become, the more you understand. And the more you open your eyes to what's going on, because there's so much suffering and there's so much horror that's going on in the world. And say you start to know deeper and deeper, understand more and more and more, then your heart is going to be holding that suffering.
Yeah, get wiped out.
No, you don't get wiped out if what's holding it is dharma, your own dharma. In other words, you don't participate in the world in that way, mm-hmm. you know, and you do what you can to help.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing I've learned from Swamiji, not that I certainly don't live up to it in any way that he does, though we do live up to it as much as we can. You do everything you can to help. He said that once. And he was talking about the Muslim invasion of India,
mm-hmm.
and so many families being broken up and young daughters taken and then abused and mistreated. There's a lot of stuff going on in India around all the religious diversity, where there's some really, really hard things. And especially when you have other religions coming in from other countries converting, then what happens is that the country, the people that are converted are no longer Hindus, right? So that's how to destroy a culture. You convert them, and then the culture no longer exists, because the culture is being held by the people. And so Swamiji said something, I do everything I possibly can to help, because he's helped and brought so many families back together and taken them out of their area because they're being threatened and all these kind of things. He's just said, I do everything I possibly can, even though it's hopeless. And he said that, I don't know that he meant it and didn't mean it, because we don't know if anything's hopeless or not. Only Ishwara knows that. But from the vantage point of a jiva in the world, the force of something is so much that you don't see the possibility. You can't see the possibility because the force is so much that you don't see how that's possible. Yeah. And so, nevertheless, and he said, I do everything I possibly can. And I learned a lot from that. And then there's these little sweet stories, you know, like the sparrow story.
Yes.
You know? That's such a sweet story. Everybody knows the sparrow story, you know?
No.
The sparrow story.
You know
There's a,
if I know it, you know it.
Yeah, you know, if there's a, there's this big conflagration, forest fire that was.
Oh yeah,
I know. And that all story. Of the animals, all of the animals came to the very edge, and they all felt they were doomed. Yeah, because who's going to put out this fire? It's huge. Everything's on fire, and so they were just giving up there, except for the one little sparrow who kept going over to the ocean right at the other side of the conflagration and filling her little beak up, bringing it and dropping it onto the fire again and again and again. And of course, they all made fun of her, but she said, "I'm doing everything I possibly can."
Wow.
Well, I think that's so, that's what it is. That's beautiful, you know. Because that's, Dharma is held in the Dharmi. The only one who holds the Dharma is the Dharmi. You know what that means? Like the person, Dharma and Adharma is held in the person. You know, it's not held someplace else. And so each person has to hold that Dharma and do what they best that they can. And you can't think about, yeah, but there's only one of me and there's a billion of Dharmis out there, so what's the use? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You just do.
That all that said, there's still a part of me that kind of laments not being more...
having a bigger footprint?
Well, being more rapacious and sociopathic and, you know, just willing to do what it takes, like the tamasic.
Like the tamasic.
Mind. I think on an external level, I'd be a lot more successful.
You might be, but I wonder what that would be like to be inside. I wonder what that would be like.
Well, it seems like sociopaths, at least, don't have a lot of emotion.
They don't.
So, you know, they're not suffering all the time.
I don't know what it's like to be a sociopath.
I don't either, but it seems.
But the thing is, it's very. I don't believe it can be easier. I don't know what that is. But a sociopath, there's something...
I would be very unhappy doing the things I do.
Yeah.
That's clear.
Yeah.
And it's really, so maybe karma yoga, it's like, you know, it's not an option for me. I wasn't given those tools.
Yeah.
But it does seem like, you know, there are advantages, certainly, in our society.
Well, maybe. It depends on what you consider an advantage. Is it advantageous to have more? Is that advantageous? I mean, it looks like it from the outside, but from the inside, I don't know. You know, I noticed when I went to India, when I'm talking now in my 20s, but I still notice it to this day. And all along the streets and the roadways, the highways, there were just shanties, shacks. You know, and I got to get to know some of the people, not well, but enough. In those, living in those shacks. I mean shacks. Build it yourself type of deals.
Cool,
you know? Yeah. And then also in some of the housing tenements where they would have like 6 or 7 children and all living just in 1 or 2 small rooms in the bathroom, crappy bathroom outside in the hall that hundreds of people were sharing. But, you know, they had happiness in themselves and in their family. They had nothing out here, nothing. But they had such a strength and well-being that it was, you felt envious of their heart, of their warmth, you know. So we can have all so many, many things, but not have that. So maybe you have to say, well, could I have all of those things and have that? So then you would say, well, that's a real punya. But the other's not really.
Right.
You know, you have all, it's really a papa, actually. You have all of these things, and yet you have that ugliness inside. You know, so that there's no happiness. So if you're granted all of these wonderful things and you have Dharma, then you consider that's some beautiful gift this time around. The sociopath, there's something physiologically wrong
in the brain.
Where they actually don't have that set, they don't have the certain experiences. They don't have any experience of guilt. Like say a normal person, you do something wrong, you feel guilty, feel uncomfortable. You feel something gets triggered inside. A sociopath, nothing gets triggered at all. Nothing.
So Could you say that that's an evolutionary advantage? Or maybe the next. I mean, there are people that argue this, actually.
Michael.
They're the next step in human evolution. That's, you know, they have an adaptation that makes them, you know, from a Darwinian perspective, more suitable towards, you know, the world we live in, and they can be more successful and predominate and will eventually.
But only as an individual.
Die off.
Not as a society or not as a species.
Yeah.
Well, as a species, sure. They reproduce.
Well, you know, the thing is, that's interesting because that's exactly what we would say is that tamasa. Yeah, and it's perfect for the, you know, that tamasic mind. And you know what else is interesting? Not to go along, not going along with you or not going along with it, but what is interesting.
I'm not saying I necessarily buy into it, but there's a part of me that's kind of, you know.
Well,
I have both sides.
What if you look at the way that in India, how they talk about the creation, the cyclical nature of the creation. They say in the fourth yuga, the Kali Yuga, right, the cow of Dharma is only standing on one leg. So the first yuga, the Satya Yuga, is like looked at like early in the morning, where everything is fresh and bright and clean and clear and awake. And the cow of Dharma is standing on all four legs. Then in the second yuga, the cow loses one leg. It's still three legs, so, you know, like a triangle, it's still sturdy, but it's lost one leg. And the universe is, you know, now like at noon or something. And then the third yuga, another leg is gone. Now the poor cow's only got two legs. That's not very good. In terms of having support, you know, for that body. It's a big body and only two of the legs, okay? That's getting later. And the fourth yuga is the Kali Yuga, where the cow is only on one leg. And so adharma prevails. And if you look at this yuga, adharma prevails. You know, and so the dharmis are have a rough time of it. You know, they do. And that is the Kali Yuga. And so you, even if you look at, say, I mean, just to be kind of gross generalities, if you divide into Republicans and Democrats, not that both don't have their problems, I'm not saying that, but one, they're very, come off as very, very aggressive, very hateful, very selfish, where they don't take into account people that are less than they are, or that are more needy than they are. At least that picture can be painted if I'm doing gross generalities.
Okay.
You know. But they have all of the money, they have all of the power.
And the say so.
They have the say. It's, what was that statistic that just came out? 85 of the wealthiest people in the world have more wealth than the bottom one half. 85 people.
Globally.
It's globally. It's something amazing, you know. So.
Fear mongers, too. Always talking about.
And there's just so many things. There's so many things going on in the world that seems that are so bad. And so dominant, and so pervasive of the world that it's discouraging. But that doesn't make it right. What's being done is not right, you know. And so you have to stand up with what you believe to be right. Just stand up to the golden rule. I think one thing, you know, like when you think of the golden rule, you should think of it in terms of all beings. All beings. Not just human beings. All beings. Apply that, and then that's nice. That's good.
Mm. I mean the animals and the...
All beings.
Fish.
All beings. We've come a long way from that.
Plants.
Yeah. If you think like that, you know, then these yugas make sense. You know, I mean, that's very, very discouraging. You know, because we're still going at lightning speed in the opposite direction of that. And so, and it's like how to turn the ship around. You know.
You mean like the little sparrow?
How to turn the ship around, you know. But then maybe the ship can't be turned around, but does that mean that you should not hold those values? You should feel, and in fact, blessed to have those values.
Mm-hmm. I have a comment that's a little bit backtracking, but when we were talking about how, you know, being dharmic is selfish, I remember an example from Swamiji. I can't remember the source. I think it might be the Value of Values, where he explains the split between the knower and the doer and the psychological stress that creates in a person. And that's where the suffering comes from a person who's a dharmic. Because they know better, but they do something different.
Oh, that's nice, yeah. Right? I understand.
So
yeah.
there's a knower-doer split in the one individual.
Yeah.
They know better, but they do something different, and it creates a split psychologically for that individual, which creates a stress, which creates discomfort.
You know where that's coming from? Or that's Arjivam. And that when it is there in the Value of Values. When he's doing the Value of Values, it's in chapter 13, where Krishna goes through all the values, Amani Tvam, Adambi Tvam, Ahimsa, Kshanti, Arjivam. And Arjivam is that straightforwardness where that split doesn't take place between what you know and what you do and what you say, that it's a straight line. But that's a really nice way to say it.
It's kind of illustrating the whole point of Rajasic versus Sattvic,
yeah.
The knowing and doing versus the knowing and doing something different.
Yeah. Or that what you know is in line with what you do, and what you do is in line with what you know. Yeah. And also what you think and what you say and what you do are all in line. So that there's no contradiction. Or no split inside of you. And that split, if that split takes place, it's very hard to... It's very stressful. It's very, very stressful, especially if you're lying, because you can never remember a lie. Because the lie doesn't have anything to... any reality, any real experience to hook onto. So if you lie about this and lie about that, and you tell one this lie to this person and this lie to that person, you'll never remember who you've lied to or who you've told what. That's really a mess. Maybe and then you have to cover up also.
Maybe we could go through that book one day.
Oh, yeah, we should do that.
Yeah, that would be sweet.
We should do the whole Value of Values. It's a beautiful book. I give it to my students when I teach spiritual counseling.
Yeah.
I give them that book. They all really love it. You know? Yeah. Because it works. It just gives a value for the values, you know? It's interesting to thinking of what you were saying, Michael. To how could I have a value for being a sociopath? I mean, I kind of know what you're saying, kind of tongue in cheek, you know. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like being envious of people who are ignorant, but you can't choose that.
Yeah, you can't choose it. Yeah.
Well, it's something that you said was, so it's a blessing to be dharmic. And what I guess what I'm saying, it doesn't always seem that way. It seems like it's a curse as well.
I think
there are disadvantages to
compared
it.
Compared to what?
Yeah.
In the material aspect of, you know, if you need to gain things, then that's true.
I don't know, but I don't see the type, the kind of ananda in the acquisition of the gains.
Right.
You may gain the things, but I don't know that that depth of happiness is there.
There have been studies done that show that people with more money are happier up until they make around 100,000 or so. I don't know if the number's still the same, but
yeah.
It was something like that when the study was done. And I'm well below that at this point, so maybe, you know, there might be a point of diminishing returns.
I saw a study like that where up to a point, which really was not that impressive, but up to a certain point, you know, your happiness quotient, because things are easier and they're more comfortable. But after that...
And you don't have the stress.
Yeah, you don't have the stress or worry and all that.
Next month.
I look at that as within samsara. And I don't see a dharma factor coming in there, but just general samsara. It was interesting. I read that study too. I don't remember all the details, but it goes up to a point, and then it's just kind of a straight line after that. And Swamiji jokes about, you know, I mean, how many cars can you drive, and how many shirts can you wear, and, you know, how many couches can you put and stick into your house?
How many rooms can you occupy in your house at one time?
Yeah.
Actually, the studies I've read say that about lottery winners.
Yeah.
Where they... Yeah, so the studies are all very consistent. That
if
you just get to a certain level where your needs are taken care of, then you do get happier, but that's about it. But lottery winners are actually slightly less happy.
I know. They tend to blow
it.
They tend to get themselves into big trouble.
Those are people that suddenly... Yeah, sudden wealth.
Sudden wealth problems. Winners. Of course, we all think, well, I think I could handle it okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Well, let me send it out here.
I will be the one that will define
the
odds.
I'm the exception.
Yes.
It's one thing. It's one thing to observe from a distance wealthy people and see them looking like they're having the time of their life. But if you actually get to know their lives intimately, they are not so happy. Some are. But that's because they've handled their inner thing. But they're not happy from the money.
Yeah.
Because they're super occupied not losing the money.
Yes.
And there are people that say that there's a lot of unhappiness when you have a lot of things that you own to manage it all and worry about losing it. And
oh, yeah. I mean, if somebody could have a lot of money and then... Their absolutely true attitude was that if they were homeless tomorrow, they'd be exactly as happy. Fine. But there's not too many people like that. And then, and obviously, that person's happiness is not coming from their money.
Yeah, Jagadish, at the very beginning of class, there's only three of us here now. There's a few more.
What was that?
Before... Just you. Everybody came late, and so there was just going to be Liz and Eddie and myself. But then I was telling Liz that I could actually do this class with nobody here. I realized that because everybody's online.
Yes, everybody's online.
I see all these little people online, and I can do it. So I can still do the class. Night, Michael. So glad you were able to come online. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Please call me.
Which Michael is that?
Not me.
Shri's husband.
Mm.
How's Shri doing?
She passed away. Okay, everybody. See you on Saturday and see you on Sunday, those of you who come.